brother were fine, doing whatever I had to do to survive. I'm not saying what I did was all right. Trying to break out of the ghetto was a day-to-day fight. Being down so long, getting up didn't cross my mind. But I knew there was a better way of life, and I was just trying to find. You don't know what you do till you're put under pressure. Cross 110th Street is a hell of a tester. Across 110th Street, pimps trying to catch a woman that's weak. Across 110th Street, pushers won't let the junkie go free. Across 110th Street.
Hello and welcome to episode 288 of the Samuel Emmanuel Movie Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Sam Reimer.
And I'm Manny Manuel.
Episode 288 today, we're continuing with episode number 9 of our 1997 mini-series, Jackie Brown.
Jackie Brown.
We're going back to Tarantino. It's been a minute since we've done a Tarantino, I think.
It's got to be the Pulp Fiction episode.
It's got to be Pulp Fiction, right?
Which is what, 2021?
Yeah. It's been a minute. So there was that one. We also did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which was 2019. Or maybe even like early 2020.
Okay, so True Romance was episode 200.
Yeah. I know he wrote, but I still don't really even think of that as Tarantino in my head.
There's Reservoir Dogs at 221.
Yeah.
Did we do Pulp Fiction all the way back in 2020? Why can't I find it?
No. Oh, I lived here. It must have been
168. Buildings. Okay, so 2022 yeah. with Reservoir Dogs, episode 221.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So how many are we up to for Tarantino on the podcast then? Is it Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Jackie Brown? Is that four?
That's it.
Four. That's it. We haven't done Kill Bill. No. We haven't done Inglourious Basterds.
We did do a top five Tarantino.
Yep.
I don't know if you want to count that or not.
Yeah, I don't really.
Okay. Then we've done four.
Yeah, No Hateful Eight, No Death Proof. I still haven't seen Death Proof.
Mm.
Yeah. So I'll have to get to that eventually. That's the last one that I haven't seen.
Interesting.
Yeah. From what I hear, it's like the one to miss. And I know people don't like Hateful Eight.
I disagree.
Yeah?
Death Proof was my number five.
Right. I remember that. I remember being surprised by that.
Yeah.
Because I kind of hear middling things on it.
Yep.
The funny thing is, I think I've said this before too, I've seen Planet Terror, which is the other half of Grindhouse.
Yes.
But I have not seen Death Proof, which is kind of funny. Because I'm not really a Robert Rodriguez fan or anything.
I think I like Death Proof because it's so different from his other films.
Yeah.
Anyways. We're here for Jackie Brown.
That we are.
All right, let's get into it. Jackie Brown, released December 25th, 1997. Merry Christmas, everybody. Directed by Quentin Tarantino. Written by Quentin Tarantino, based off an Elmore Leonard novel. Starring Pam Grier, Samuel L. Jackson, and Robert Forster. Has a Metascore of 62. Wow. Letterboxd score of 3.9. That's much better. Oscar nomination, one. Only one. For Best Supporting Actor for Robert Forster. Had a budget of $12 million, and it made $39 million, making it the 58th highest grossing film of the year. The plot? A flight attendant with a criminal past gets nabbed by the ATF for smuggling. Under pressure to become an informant against the illegal arms dealer she works for, she must find a way to secure her future without getting killed. Now, as per tradition, when we have a movie that Sam hasn't seen, Sam's guessed the plot on weeks prior, but Sam has kind of seen this movie. But we did have a guest a while ago that hadn't. And that guest was little baby Wesley.
Makes me laugh. It makes me laugh because I know he's listening to this just like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why would you say that?
Little baby Wesley gave his guess at what the movie Jackie Brown could be about. Let's listen to him now. Sam, what do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we have a much better film. We have Jackie Brown, episode 284 from Mr. Quentin Tarantino, hopefully to rinse the taste of this movie out of our mouth.
That's very true. Now, Sam has seen this movie, while our little baby Wes has not. Nope. So Wes is going to take Sam's place, and he's going to guess the plot of Jackie Brown.
Oh, God. I've seen all Tarantino except for two, being Jackie Brown and Death Proof. And I honestly forget who else is in the cast. I know I've heard it before, but I've heard is about how Samuel L. Jackson is great in this movie. But I have no idea what it's about. I'm gonna lean to more towards that it's in the vein of Pulp Fiction. And that it's a crime movie that follows cocaine dealers going about their day-to-day shipping drugs, trafficking drugs, killing people, lots of that. Classic classic Tarantino tropes. That's as far as I'll go. I'll say it's a movie about coke dealers.
There we go.
While he was not correct, yeah. Not too far off either.
Nope.
Like very, very much in that vein. Like specifically, coke was not correct.
Yeah.
But
dealer,
dealer, bang on.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Half points.
I'll give him some.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like a safe bet with Tarantino is always contract killer, bounty hunter.
It's pretty fair.
That's always a safe bet.
Yeah. Pretty much.
And you know what? While there's no bounty hunter in this movie, there is a bail bondsman who's like not a bounty hunter.
Correct.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Bails people out and then, you know, it's a little bit different, but it's a related gig.
Yeah. Sam, and thank you, Wes, for partaking in that. Why don't you share your spoiler-free thoughts on Jackie Brown?
I would happily. So I have seen this the least of any Tarantino movie. I was about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, in the same spot as Wes. I was only missing Jackie Brown and Death Proof. I did cross Jackie Brown off the list, so I have seen it, and this isn't even one of those ones where I kind of give a half-assed, like, ooh, I think I've seen it, maybe I saw half of it, maybe I saw pieces. Like, no, I sat down and watched this front to back probably about 5 years ago for the first time, and I hadn't revisited it since. Admittedly, I had forgotten a lot about it. If you had asked me to guess the plot, and I'm thankful that you didn't, I may have missed some details because I had forgotten a fair amount about it. I have little connection to the films that inspire this. So, Tarantino has said in many interviews, and it's readily apparent to anybody who wants to look, this is inspired by blaxploitation films. He also has compared it to Rio Bravo and a lot of what he calls hangout movies. I have not seen any of those. I have no connection to any of these. And Tarantino, being the film buff that he is, I'm trying not to feel too bad about not seeing what he's seen. I know that he's listed Rio Bravo as one of his Desert Island movies, one of three or something. With that said, there is a really a lot to like. These types of films that are about a plot to steal money, I guess you can call this a heist film, more or less. These types of movies can get really name-heavy and convoluted, because the plan has to be convoluted in order to be impressive. So I'm not always optimistic for these sorts of things, because some heist movies tend to come off as, like, the more convoluted they are, the smarter they are, and really it just gets confusing for the sake of being confusing. I don't find that with Jackie Brown. For such an interesting heist, they really managed to keep it pared down with the number of people who were involved in it, with the number of steps that are involved in it, with the number of things that are going wrong. They managed to keep the heist really tight in the writing process, which of course they do because it's Tarantino and he's a brilliant screenwriter. So it walks that tightrope. It's convoluted enough to be impressive, but not convoluted enough to you know, just be straight up confusing. So I really like that about it. I am not really familiar with Pam Grier at all. I don't really know her from anything. It seems like she was probably a star in the aforementioned blaxploitation genre. And also, I'm not really that familiar with Robert Forster. In looking through his filmography, he's shown up in things that I've liked, but seems like maybe a B-lister or maybe a character actor would be more accurate. But not somebody I'm familiar with. He, of course, was nominated for an Oscar for this. But I really like this about Tarantino, about this movie, and about other movies, is that he is not shy about straight up rejecting people for these roles. I'm sure you'll get into this in trivia. I'm sure you came across this. But De Niro wanted to play the Robert Forster character. He wanted to play Max. And Tarantino, in this, his third film, told one of the greatest actors of all time? No. He's like, no, I'm sorry, I can't give you Max because I wrote Max for Robert Forster, who at that time, it appears, was not in anything. He wasn't on any of the cast lists that were going out to directors for people to consider. Tarantino really revived his career with this, and he rejected fucking De Niro for the role. So I respect that about Tarantino, that he knows who the parts are for, and he'll do anything to get the right person in the right role. He's very excited about getting people who film fans will know, even though I did not know who this was. So yeah, I respect all of that. Additionally, the soundtrack is electric. I have been getting in the last couple of years a lot more into funk, soul, Motown, the sort of black music from the 60s to 80s. Mm-hmm. I've been getting a little bit more into that recently. So for that reason, I really love the soundtrack to this.
It's a
lot of fun. I'm not super familiar with the Delphonics either, but I'll probably be checking them out because I love that song that keeps playing. Also, the 110th Street song that plays in the opening is perfect. Also plays in the closing. Thematic, beautiful. Loved all of that. So yeah, Jackie Brown, this is a movie I was happy to revisit. I don't think it'll rate among my favorite Tarantino movies. This is a movie I would describe as solid. It's tight. It's not as big and sprawling as some of his other ones. It's not as ambitious as some of his other movies. But I do like that he's focused it around the main character, Jackie Brown, who really is just a person. She's not a contract killer. She's not a super badass. She's not a killer. She's a woman who doesn't make enough money, who resorts to a life of crime to support herself because she is a black ex-con who, if she loses this job, will be fucked.
Yep.
And she just won't have any other options. And she doesn't really have any other options. And that's how she's portrayed. She's not portrayed as somebody who is okay with murder and crime and death. She's portrayed as somebody who's fucking desperate. And I really like that about Quentin Tarantino's approach to her characterization. So I'll leave it there for now. Not in the upper echelon Tarantino for me, but absolutely solid. For any other director, this would be their best movie. Well, for most other directors, this would be their best movie.
For those living under a rock that listen to this, Pulp Fiction is my all-time favorite movie. Pulp Fiction is a movie that changed my life. So when this was his follow-up to Pulp Fiction, so when I heard that Tarantino had a new movie coming out, you can bet your sweet ass I was there on opening night. And I remember leaving disappointed. I remember,
because it didn't live up to the greatest movie you had ever seen.
Yeah, I know. Shocker, right? But what I did, I left disappointed because I was expecting more. When I went back and rewatched it, when it hit home video, it was apparent that my expectations were too high, and this is just a completely fantastic movie. It's just not going to reach the lofty heights of my favorite movie of all time. So as I've revisited this movie numerous times in the, 27 years since it came out, mm-hmm. I've had nothing but a great time doing so. This movie is expertly crafted from start to finish. Tarantino's casting ability is almost par none. Like, it's pretty rare, and off the top of my head, I can't think of a bad performance he's had in any of his films. And he really knows how to bring the most out of his actors, plucking Robert Forster from basic obscurity and getting an Oscar nomination out of him. Just completely proves how right he is in that he wrote this part for Robert, he didn't write this part for Robert Forster because the part of Max Cherry existed in a novel already.
Of course. Yeah.
So, but that's who he had in mind. And like you said, being able to stand up to De Niro or say no to De Niro, he didn't have to stand up. He's like, no, I have this role. I have somebody else in mind. And it worked out, obviously, with an Oscar nomination. It was the right call. This movie, I think, when it comes to the awards and others, at the time, I feel all of us felt it was a letdown after Pulp Fiction. That's why there's only the one Oscar nomination. As the years have gone by, a lot of people are starting to claim and feel that this is Tarantino's best movie. I disagree. For me, this is in the bottom half out of his 9 films, or 8, if you want to count the Kill Bills as one, which I tend to. This is near the bottom for me, but you know, that's like that's like saying Toy Story 4 is the worst Toy Story movie. Still better than most other films.
like Toy Story 4. I think it's unfairly shat on.
It is. I think it is. I can 100% is on, but it's knocked up against 1, 2, and 3, which are absolutely fucking unreal. So I think Tarantino's films are spectacular. He is in my top 4 favorite directors. Depending on my mood, my number one kind of, well, actually, no, my number one stays number one. My number two always kind of flip-flops around. But this movie is, while it is near the bottom of my Tarantino rankings, like I said, this could be almost any other director's best film. And it's, in my opinion, one of his worst, but all of his movies are spectacular. The performances throughout are amazing. Pam Grier, this was my only experience with Pam Grier prior to stuff she's done since then. So I did know when she was cast and stuff like that, I knew that she was from the blaxploitation era. I just never seen any of those films. I had no experience with Robert Forster prior to this. And then obviously I knew all about De Niro, Samuel L. Jackson, and Bridget Fonda and Michael Keaton. So I was really excited to revisit this. I'm very, very, very interested on where this is going to end up on my top 10 of the year for 97. I'm very curious as to where I'm going to have it. But all in all, it's a Tarantino film, and I'm happy to discuss it.
Just real quick, I guess nothing too interesting on this. I just real quick wanted to say that the reason I didn't remember the Reservoir Dogs episode is because I wasn't on it. And I was just racking my brain for why that was possible. But I thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah, don't listen to it.
No?
The audio got fucked up pretty bad.
Oh, it's too bad.
I know.
The other thing I wanted to point out was small thing. You said either 9 or 8 movies, depending on how you count Kill Bill. It's actually 10 or 9 now.
How is it 10 or 9?
Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, Kill Bill. Let's count it as one.
Okay.
Death Proof, Inglourious Bastards, Django, Hateful Eight, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So if you counted them as 2, it would be 10.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You said 9 or 8. It's 10 or 9.
Oh, yeah. He counts them as 1 is 9. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I was just, we're off by 1. Was all I was saying. But I agree. I tend to count them as 1 because he counts them as 1.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's, I use his ranking since they're his films or his number.
Yeah. And honestly, they're, in my opinion, indistinguishable in quality. They're the same quality.
I 100% agree.
So.
Yeah. Cool.
And I honestly can't remember if I think of a scene. If I think of like the fight against the Crazy 88 and Oren Ishii, I remember that scene vividly. I can't tell you off the top of my head whether that's 1 or 2.
I can. All right.
Which is it?
It's 1.
Okay.
Let's get into this movie. We are going to spoil Jackie Brown in 3, 2, 1. Huggo a fuck of yourself. Sam, my first scene is the opening.
Yeah, cool. All right.
Cool.
I don't have anything before that.
Wicked.
As I was sitting down to watch it.
So I have this down because the filmmaking of this is what makes it impressive. Mm-hmm. It is a long tracking shot of Jackie Brown going to her job with down on 110th Street, playing over top of it, blasting out the song fucking rules. She is just walking her way to her job. It sets the tone perfectly. I meant to pull this clip up, but it is in my notes. There is a chance that Danny DeVito makes an uncredited cameo in this scene. You cannot see his face, but everything else about the character that you see, the person on screen, makes you think it's Danny DeVito.
Wow.
And you don't see his face, but he is small, diminutive, kind of stocky, and it's just a couple, well, 2 seconds. But it looks just
like... Has anyone ever asked him publicly or Tarantino publicly about it?
Nope. Nope. But he is a producer on the film.
Ah.
Yeah. He's produced several of Tarantino's films.
There you go.
And I'll be honest, Pam Grier looks hot. She's very, very attractive older woman.
She's a babe.
Yeah.
In this movie.
Yeah.
There's
a couple... spoiler alert for 52 in Review. She is a big-time nominee for Red Carpet.
While we're on the topic, I'm just going to bring it up. It's not one of the, like, air quotes, not one of the sexier outfits in this movie, but when she's wearing her overalls in her...
Yeah, and her white shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So cute.
One
so cute.
Fucking 100%. Yes. Yep. I have a weakness for overalls. I'm not lying. Okay, I'm not lying.
I'm glad we're on the same page on that.
I'll tell you this right now. I won't tell the whole story, but you've heard me mention her before, one of my best friends, Pandora. Mm-hmm. The night I met her, she was wearing brown cord overalls. Mm. And to celebrate our friendship, we always text each other a happy anniversary on the day that we met. Mm-hmm. But she made me a mix CD and labeled the mix CD brown cord overalls. When I saw the night we met, we were at a nightclub, and I was there with a female friend of mine, not a girl I was dating. I went out dancing, and I remember walking into the club, and I saw Pandora dancing in those brown cord overalls, and I elbowed my friend. I'm like, I'm going to marry that girl.
That's great.
Yeah. I didn't marry her, but we're still been stuck together for life. That was it.
It's got to be the 90s, right?
It's 97.
That's when overalls.
It's 97. Yeah,
it's 97. There you go. Man, 90s had a lot of things wrong, but overalls they had right.
96? 97.
97?
96, 97.
Hmm. I'm thinking Jennifer Aniston.
I've
friends.
Almost been friends with Pandora for 30 years.
You've almost been friends with her as long as I've been alive.
Ah, it's fucked. I'm going to have to check with her now if it's 96 or 97.
What was the day? Out of curiosity.
Oh, the exact date. Bad friend. Thankfully, she doesn't listen to this podcast. Oh. I keep wanting. Actually, I should ask her if she wants to come on. She'd be really good. She's huge into classic films.
Why hasn't she?
Because I haven't asked her. Because I'm a bad friend.
Damn.
Let's see.
And you forgot the day you were friends.
I know. Hold on. It's May 10th.
May 10th.
May 10th.
Dude, invite her on for May 10th.
It's a Friday.
Can make it work. Or release it on May 10th.
The night we record is her birthday, May 9th.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
We met around her birthday.
That's very sweet.
She was out celebrating for her birthday.
Yeah.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
It's a really good story that whole night, the night we met, but I can't tell it because it really does slander somebody else.
Oh.
Yes.
Now I extra want to know.
Yeah, 100%. I will, if you remind me, I'll tell you on the ride home.
Fuck yeah.
100% okay, I will. Cool. But, like, I have no, I shouldn't say I have no problem. The person that it slanders, I am friends with.
Hmm.
Very rocky part, but I will not throw that person's dirty laundry onto a podcast.
I love that.
Yes.
Okay. You have so many secrets.
I do. I do. It's not a secret. It's just I don't want to throw this person under the bus on a podcast.
Yeah. To the opening.
Yeah.
I'm actually really glad that you brought up the opening because it gives me the chance.
Me too.
It gives me the chance to do this. Boo! Oh, I have gotten a lot of enjoyment, a lot more enjoyment, watching films that were produced by Miramax, booing them audibly. If you're listening to this and you get an icky feeling when the Miramax logo comes up on screen, I promise you that goes away at least a little bit, at least for me, by booing it. Feels really good.
All right.
Boo Harvey Weinstein. Yeah. But I don't really have a lot of those on the intro. I do. I love this song, and it's... I can't explain why this long take of her on the conveyor belt is so satisfying.
It is.
But the way that she just like remains perfectly in frame is mm-hmm. such a cool filmmaking thing. It does bother me a very small amount for reasons I can't explain. Like, aren't you supposed to walk on those things? Isn't the point of them that you can like walk faster?
Yes.
That you can get where you're going faster. So the fact that she's just standing on it for a lot of it is not an annoyance in the way that it makes me enjoy the movie less, but when I'm watching it, I'm like, aren't you supposed to be, like, going somewhere?
Have you not been to the airport and watched people not walk on those?
Yeah, it's annoying when you're, like, when you want to walk on one and someone's just standing there. It's like, fuck off.
Well, they're lazy.
Gotta make it to my gate.
Yeah.
Yeah, another movie, by the way, for another time in this 97 miniseries where we're going to be talking about air travel, where certain things... like I imagine smuggling of cash and cocaine was probably significantly easier pre 9/11.
Oh yes. 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 Yeah. Everything was easier pre 9/11.
Yeah.
All right. What's your first scene?
My first scene. What do I have? I have, Ordell convincing Beaumont to get into the trunk.
Okay. Fire away.
Chris Tucker.
Yes.
Making his
back to back?
His best performance of 1997.
No, disagree. Disagree. Disagree wholeheartedly.
Beaumont is a great little character. I love I love the appearance and him and Ordell. Watching this on rewatch now, knowing where this scene goes, watching Ordell walk up to Beaumont and greet him like an old friend is fucking ice cold.
Yes.
Like, oh my God. The fact that he is able to greet this man in the way that he does is so cold, knowing that he's about to put this man in the back of a trunk. And what a smooth talker. I guess since it's Samuel Jackson, I should call him a smooth-talking motherfucker.
Yeah.
What a smooth-talking motherfucker Samuel Jackson is, that he can talk, like, Beaumont knows who he is. He knows how dangerous Ordell is, and he still manages to convince him to willingly enter the trunk of a car after he has just gone to prison and is a danger to Squeal. And
no, has squealed.
Yeah.
Because he gave up Jackie Brown.
Yeah, he did. That's right. And Ordell knows this of him. I don't think he knows for a fact that Beaumont did squeal. He's not at this point in the movie. Because when he goes to Jackie's apartment and he's yes. asking her about them, she says, Beaumont. And he said, I fucking knew it.
Yeah.
But yeah, at any rate, the fact that Beaumont knows who Ordell is and still willingly gets into the trunk of this car is just, it comes back to the script of how well written this character is and Samuel L. Jackson's performance, who is so smooth and so in control mm-hmm. and so good. Apparently the whole look of Ordell, the sort of samurai style hair, the very long hair in the ponytail, apparently the entire look was Samuel L. Jackson. Yep. His input
yes.
on that. So I love this character. It's a great introduction. I don't know if it's specifically Ordell's introduction, but it is,
no.
Because we see him in Max's office before this.
Well, we see him and De Niro in his apartment first.
Oh, yeah, of course we see that, too. So while this is not the introduction, this is a great look at what he's capable of. And we have... there is something weighing over our heads in this scene. The fact that we know this man's an arms dealer and is potentially dangerous. So, yeah. The second he asks Beaumont to get into the trunk of the car... you just know. You're like, this is a problem. We mm-hmm. get that stereotypical or that prototypical Tarantino trunk shot.
Yes.
from beneath, of course. One of his many signatures. But yeah, it's a fucking excellent scene with incredible dialogue.
Yep. I agree. I've always been a big fan of the one shot of when the car leaves and the camera cranes up, obviously on a crane, and you see it pull into an empty lot. And then you see the murder happen from afar. I've always loved that shot and it's not even a transition. That shot of the crane, the crane shot.
Yeah, and what ratchets the tension up even more when he's after he's put Beaumont in the trunk of the car, and he gets into the driver's seat. The putting on of the gloves is fucking sinister.
Yes,
I love it. Awesome. And that'll come back.
Yes, it will. My next scene is when Ordell goes to Jackie's.
Yeah, that's the next one I have too.
You have that one as well?
Yep.
Okay, so as he's walking there, he puts on the gloves.
Mm-hmm.
So we've yep. already established
that. We've seen what happens.
We already know what was going to happen already, mm-hmm. like, but the putting on the gloves just cements it. Ordell turning off the lights and Jackie not really reacting to it that much because she knows what's going to happen. So she's trying her best. She's fucking pissed that Ordell kind of fucked her over. Like, the Mexican partner putting that shit in the bag, not without her knowledge. She's fucking angry. Ordell's starting to probe. Like, you know, what did they ask you? What did you say? Are you sure you didn't slip up? She confirms that... this is where you write this. She confirms that Beaumont's the one that ratted. She turns the light back on. He turns them back off. He comes closer, and this is excellent editing. Go to the split screen mm-hmm. of Max Cherry. And I remember the first time I'm watching, I'm like, why the fuck are you showing me this guy? Like, this has nothing to do with the scene. No, it has everything to do with this scene because we see him checking in his car and eventually goes and checks the glove box, which they established earlier had a gun in it. And the moment he opens it and realizes the gun is not in there, we hear the click of her with the gun. Right there. Jackie flips a switch, not the light switch, but the switch from actually is putting on someone being unsure and trying to calm Ordell down to where she has put the gun against his cock and has clicked and pulled the lever, and she takes complete fucking control.
As you do when you have a gun against someone's dick.
Yes, but she's a complete fucking badass. And then this is where she barters a deal for her silence and figures out a plan. It's a great scene. Pam Grier kind of shows this vulnerable side, which we find out is an act. And then the moment that she realizes that Ordell is truly there to kill her, as he has his hands around her throat, she pulls out the gun and just takes complete fucking charge and is just a complete fucking badass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. And Pam Grier, Tarantino was notably very upset that she did not get a nomination for this. And it is this flipping of the switch that she has in here, this other gear that she has in here, that really makes this performance so special. I think it's not just this scene, but she has this very innocent batting of the eyelashes demeanor that she can put on around Ordell, that she can put on around ATF agents.
Mm-hmm.
But she has this other completely dominant, in control, scheming side that she also puts on when she wants to. She can kind of do everything.
Yeah.
And I love the writing of this character, and the performance of the character is really good. One of the things I love about this scene in the apartment is after Ordell realizes that she has the jump on him, he starts rambling about the police. He just goes, "This is what I'm talking about with the police in this country. They're turning black people against each other." And she's like, "Shut the fuck up. Like, this isn't about race politics. Like, you were about to fucking kill me. Like, you are such a hypocrite." I love that that portion of the scene as well. But yeah, this is one of my picks too. It's a really good scene.
Awesome. What do you have next?
Wow. Is that really the next one that I have? Yeah, I have the money exchange specifically from Lewis and Mel's perspective.
Okay, so I have that all part of that. I just have it. Jackie gets a suit.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's...
So I have it from all three perspectives.
Yeah, that's. I wasn't really too sure if we'd include it as one scene or as multiple. It is really the bulk of the movie, or the centerpiece of the movie.
Yeah.
But what I love about this in particular is Lewis and Mel's side. So we haven't had a chance to talk about them. We did touch on De Niro, the fact that he wanted one role, got another one. I feel like I've never seen him in this sort of Lewis role before, as a bit of a moron.
Yeah.
As a kind of a lackey, just as a hired gun who's dumb and kills who he wants. We don't really see him kill too many people, but he got caught doing one robbery. He fucked Ordell's girl when he wasn't totally sure if it was cool. So he's established himself as not particularly cool.
Yeah.
We've also established that Mel is a bit of a hothead as well. She can kind of fly off the handle, and she's maybe not the smartest cookie herself.
Mm-hmm.
So it is so great that we see these two arguing, and we see her continue to poke the bear when we know that that is a very, very bad idea. I did not know what was going to happen the first time I saw this scene. I thought he was going to smack her and tell her to shut the fuck up. I really thought that was what we were going to happen. But the completely ill-advised decision to shoot Mel in the parking lot, and him just yelling at her lifeless body, just like, "That's what I said was going to happen. Like, didn't I say that was going to happen if you kept running your mouth?" And it's the De Niro performance that sells it. Like, you can feel how fed up he is and how emasculated he feels.
Yep.
He feels very emasculated by not knowing where they parked. He's probably high at the time and probably forgot. But their banter and their chemistry, for lack of a better term, their comedic chemistry is really good together, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's the highlight of this whole centerpiece of the movie.
Lewis.
Yeah, the hiss is so good.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, I kind of lumped all three perspectives into one.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a cheat, but whatever. It's our podcast. We get to do what we want. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Pam Grier looks fucking amazing in that suit.
Yep.
That Mel comments on it, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. She looks fucking smoke show hot in it.
Mm-hmm.
I love how when she comes out, she plays the part well. She's frantic because she's been, quote-unquote, robbed, when she hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But she plays the part the moment she comes out because she doesn't know who's watching. And she finally finds Ray. We this is when we, after this, we switch to the Mel and Lewis perspective, which you've broken down great. And then we see it from Max's perspective. And Max, I love that he shows up to the mall playing the Delphonics, which he has bought. We get to see the Mel and Lewis fight from his perspective. He watches Jackie leave, and then just hangs back. Is anybody else watching? Is anybody else going in? No? Okay. Just walks in, grabs the money willingly. The lady gives up, not knowing, you know, it's just a bag with beach towels in it. He waits to see. He jumps in his car and just sits there, watches the door. Nope. She pulled this off, and he drives away. Scot-free with $500,000. Easy peasy.
You know what's another funny thing? So I watched this on Blu-ray. I have actually a collector's edition Blu-ray of this movie. I actually don't remember how I got my hands on that, but it was my first time watching it on that. So I also watched at least a portion of the Tarantino interview that's on the special features disc.
Is it that one there?
It is. Top row. It is. It's that exact one. I watched the special features, and one of the things he talked about that didn't make it into the final draft but was in early drafts is that $500,000 is not a lot of money. It's not really a lot of money, and apparently it was Ordell's plan to make $1 million and go to the Philippines, where he would live out the rest of his life, you know, like a king with $1 million.
Yes, your money... Canadian and American money goes a long fucking way over there.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. It does. But yeah, I always find that so funny. That just like all of this is over $500,000, which admittedly would have been worth more in 97. But yeah, my guess is that it would probably be... hold on. Let me do some quick math. I'm going to say 1.2. $500,000 in 97 is probably 1.2 now. Somewhere in there.
Hmm.
Do you have the inflation calculator, or you're going to it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Let's go here.
Because I think, I mean, we've done box office calculations on this sort of stuff before, and I think it's roughly around there.
Oop. 97. It is, it's not even $1 million. It's
really?
950.
Oh. Yeah, so, if, don't get me wrong, I would love to have $1 million now. And it would definitely, it would change my life.
Yeah.
But Ordell being an arms dealer in Compton and only having having $1 million to his name, basically, is not that extravagant.
Nope. Nope.
Which is pretty funny to me.
But if his plan was to go to the Philippines, like I had a friend, he went over to the Philippines and he got a fully tailored suit for $21.
Whoa.
Yeah. And that was back in the early 2000s.
That's wild.
Yeah. He's like, he was over there. He saw a buddy of his told him about a store. So he went in there and they took all his measurements, fully tailored. And then, yeah, he's like, he's like, I paid whatever they asked me to pay. And then I did the calculations. Like, I paid $21. Wow. I was like, fuck.
And what, I mean, admittedly, I've never owned the tailored suit, but I have to imagine $1,000 on the low end.
Probably. Yep.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I should go to the Philippines.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that the whole, basically the heist, Jackie, I just called it Jackie Gets a Suit, but it's the heist itself that that I had there.
I do like the style of approaching it from multiple perspectives and kind of giving the audience different information on different times.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I didn't mention about the Lewis perspective, actually, is obviously right from the very beginning of the movie, he's been crushing on Melanie hard. Even though we didn't talk about the scene, I love the one where we meet Lewis and Melanie for the first time, and they're always shot in these two shots where they're both, maybe they're not looking at each other, but they're both always aware of each other, and they have this chemistry right off the gate. So when we see them in the apartment later leading up to this heist, and he's fucking frustrated, he's late, Ordell yells at him for being late, he's like, well, it's Melanie's fault, and he's like, get that bitch out of the room. It's like, you're the boss here, like, get her out of the room. That whole back and forth is fucking comedy gold for me. I always forget this about Tarantino, even though I shouldn't at this point, I should be well acquainted. He is just a fucking hilarious writer.
Yes,
he's a very funny writer, and there's some good laughs in that interaction.
Awesome. What do you have next?
I have Lewis explaining why he had to shoot Melanie.
All right, fire away.
Another great scene of him hopping into the car. Again, it's just Tarantino's dialogue that makes the scene come alive. And I also like Samuel L. Jackson's flabbergasted expression. He can tell right out of the gate that something has gone awry. He's like, where's Melanie? And Lewis just instantly gets defensive. He's like, you know what, man? She was riding me. She was getting on my nerves. She kept asking me where the car was. And you can see in Ordell's face, like, this is not going in a positive direction. He's like, so you just left her there? He goes, well, I shot her. And the reveal of that is just such a... I can't imagine having to admit that to... in that situation, to this man, who was a very dangerous man that you just shot and killed his girlfriend in the middle of a job because you were annoyed with her. Not because you had to, not because it was something pragmatic that you had to do. You just lost your cool because she was bugging you.
Yeah.
Really fucking stupid thing to do. And it's fantastically acted that De Niro is clearly a little embarrassed and a little flustered over it. And Samuel L. Jackson is great at his bewilderment. I've always liked this scene.
Mm. I love it. I like not one of the scenes I picked, but it is a very enjoyable scene. The two of them together are really great. It's so funny to see. This is 7 years after they were together in Goodfellas, when Samuel Jackson had almost no lines, and yet here he is, just completely owning every scene he's in over De Niro.
I forget that Samuel Jackson's in Goodfellas all the time.
Yeah. I have my last scene is the end of the movie when Jackie goes to see Max. Do you have anything before that?
Yeah, I have. Your last scene was again?
When Jackie goes to see Max at the end.
Oh, okay. I have Ordell going to Max's office. Okay. So the, I guess what you can call
the climax.
The climax of the movie. Excellent scene in the car. Another great conversation in it. What is, of course, a prototypical Tarantino script, just full of great conversations. But Ordell has this awesome monologue where he tells Max that he means business. This is Ordell probably at his most intimidating and at his most desperate. Him saying, if I get, like, I know that you guys are scheming against me, so if I get in there and it's not exactly what Jackie said it was, you are going to be the first one to die. Is there anything you'd like to tell me before we go in there? And Robert Forster fucking cool as a cucumber.
So fucking cool.
Nope. And again, knowing where the scene goes, balls of steel.
Yep. Just
absolute poker face. Nope. Nothing I want to tell you. I would crack. Ordell is a bad motherfucker.
Yeah, he is. And he's yeah. And Samuel Jackson's so great at being intimidating. But the way that he plays it is so calmly and eerily in control, even though he's not in control. He's trying to establish control. And I think that's where Robert Forster, I think one of the things that Robert Forster's character makes him easily cool and calm in this is that he's just dealt with criminals his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And he's dealt with people desperate not to go to jail. And his job is if they've jumped bail, he's got to go get them and bring them in. Like, that's his job as a bail bondsman. And so while this is obviously scary and he knows what's going to go down, his whole life is about staying cool.
He's probably been held at gunpoint many times in those 15,000 interactions he's had.
Yeah. So great scene, great acting from both of them. I love it. It's a great monologue that you said, a little interaction between the two of them, and it is upping the tension of what's about to come.
And then, of course, we get inside, and we've seen Jackie attempt to draw the gun a couple of times, just practicing in the event that they come in. So we think that she's just going to try to get the jump on him.
Mm-hmm.
But I love this plan coming to fruition of her actually getting the ATF guys to kill him.
Yeah.
I think she has the gun there as backup, as like a plan B in case things really do go south and maybe Ordell gets the drop on the ATF guys or kills Max or anything like that. And I think it's a backup plan, but I think this is the sign of a really great heist movie, is that when the full scope of the plan is revealed, you just are kind of left with this, of course, like, of course that had to happen. Like,
yep.
That makes perfect sense that is how it would have gone down. And it's, like I said earlier, just the right amount of convoluted. So when we reach the conclusion of this plan, she calls the ATF guys on Ordell. It's like the perfect conclusion of this scheme.
Yeah. Agreed. It's just perfectly a perfectly executed plan. So my last scene is when Jackie goes to see Max. They've been flirting throughout the whole movie. It's one of the sweeter romances I've seen in a long time. It's so innocent. Mm-hmm. Like, these two people are just kind of into each other, and they both are kind of at the same point in their life where they've done their jobs for so long. They're kind of just wanting to live out the rest of their lives happy. And Jackie found a way to do it by stealing money from a arms dealer. Mm-hmm. And Max was happy to help her out. He is throughout the whole movie, you can see he's crushing on her fucking hard. Mm-hmm. And this end scene where she comes and invites him to go to Spain with her, you're begging him to say yes.
Find some happiness elsewhere. But
yeah, but he doesn't.
Why does he stay?
I think he's unsure that Jackie's honest with him, that he's worried that she was just using him to get her plan done. Mm-hmm. She needed him for the plan to work. And I think that he's genuinely unsure that she's truly honest in the things that she's saying and doing with him.
I guess he is a bail bondsman. While I don't think it's ever stated that he's an ex-cop, I've always just kind of assumed, you know, he makes many references to police officers and what police officers do.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he's been a bail bondsman for a long time.
30 years.
30 years? Oh, yeah. For some reason in my head, I was always wondered if he's maybe had a brief career as a cop or something, but maybe the timeline doesn't add up. I'm not totally sure.
Could be. Who knows?
Regardless, yeah, this is maybe part of it that... not that I dislike, but just that I have to think about their relationship, because I'm with you. I want Max to... I think Max really should go with her after everything that they've been through. Like, the ordeal is done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the bad guys are dead. It's not like he has anything to run from, but he's basically stated in previous scenes he doesn't have anything left for him.
Yep.
Here. So a new adventure might be called for, but I agree. Maybe his lack of trust in Jackie... just led him to believe he'd rather just stay comfortable in what he already knows. But
yeah. And then I love that when he gets the phone call and he asks them to call back in half an hour, you're expecting him to go after, mm-hmm. and he doesn't. And then it cuts to Jackie, and you're expecting her to turn around, and she doesn't. I love it. It's realistic.
Yeah.
While I want the two of them to be happy together, I love this ending.
Yeah, it's like a little bit, just the right amount of bittersweetness. I think everybody who ends up alive is better off for having been through this thing, but there's still just the right amount of mistrust that they can't get the absolute perfect Hollywood ending.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think many Hollywood screenwriters would not have Jackie get away with it. You know, like I think most screenwriters would have this be a cautionary tale about how crime doesn't pay. But you know what? We, the audience, like Jackie. We want her to succeed. We want her to have good stuff because she's smart and resourceful, and she's a black woman, and her life has not been great leading up to it. She makes very bad money and has a very bad job.
Mm-hmm.
And we want her to succeed because of that, because she's fucking hardworking and smart and beautiful.
Yep.
So yeah, I think the fact that we've written this movie so that she succeeds at the end. I don't know. I just think it's a better ending than what would be the traditional Hollywood ending of her, you know, maybe going to jail or maybe dying or sacrificing herself for Max or something like that and realizing crime doesn't pay or anything. No, she fucking earned it, man. She worked hard for that money.
that's a 90s ending.
Yeah.
Is that.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. What are you picking for your favorite scene?
That is a tough one. I think probably just the money exchange. It's such a big scroll. Big sprawling moment of the movie, but the money exchange is really well realized from these multiple perspectives.
Yeah, I'm with you there. It's the heist part of the film, mm-hmm. is my favorite as well. All right, on to noms and nods. Where are you going to start us with?
Let's do Pam Grier. So, nice. As we said, neither of us particularly experienced with Pam Grier. I don't even think I really have a lot of her after this. Just looking through it real quick, I don't think I have a single movie of hers other than Jackie Brown. Yeah, none that I can see anyway. So this is my only Pam Grier experience, and I really like her in this. She's on top of being insanely gorgeous, is a total badass. Somebody who comes off as a true working person, somebody who's working class, does not come from privilege, kind of the opposite, is largely living in poverty and has no advantages given to her. But she sees an opportunity to take the life that she wants for herself. And the fact that she's so unafraid of Ordell and so unafraid of fucking him over goes a long way to earning her audience respect. And some of that is the writing, of course, with a great Tarantino script. But part of that is Pam Grier's confidence to both play this sturdiness, the sturdy confidence that she knows that her plan is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And also this batting of the eyelashes that she can do around people like Max. I think she genuinely likes Max. I also do think that she's manipulating him a lot. And the fact that she's able to play both of those sides really well is a testament to the performance, which, as Quentin Tarantino pointed out, is unfortunately not nominated.
Yeah. So I'm with you. You've seen two performances,
mm-hmm.
Helen Hunt and Kate Winslet. Can you remove one of those to put Pam in?
It's been a minute since Helen Hunt and As Good As It Gets, but I don't feel strongly enough about it. I'm not going to remove Kate Winslet, unfortunately. But, yeah. So I don't know if I have a strong enough opinion to put Pam Grier in here.
Okay.
I honestly don't remember Helen Hunt's performance very well, though.
Okay. So, but with your three empty slots of the ones you have.
Oh, if I can take any of those, for sure.
All right. So we could see Pam Grier making your list
end of the year. We could. Yeah.
So I've seen three of the performances. I got to see Julie Christie in Afterglow. I have no problem kicking her out for Pam Grier in a fucking heartbeat. Not that Julie Christie's bad. It was a almost nothing poor performance for me. I have seen Helen Hunt in As Good As It Gets. It's a movie I've watched several times in the 27 years. The more I watch Jackie Brown, I might be able to put Pam Grier over. I will not take out Kate. Kate's a lock for me. Mm-hmm. Kate 100% will be there at the end of the year for me. I will be seeing Helena Bonham Carter soon in The Wings of the Dove. Sadly, Judy Dench and Mrs. Brown, that's going to be difficult for me to get a hold of.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm with you, 100% in there. I'm going to go with, because I needed to make sure. I wanted to make sure that people are in the correct categories. So he ran in lead actor. I'm going to go Samuel L. Jackson for best actor.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy for me. It's difficult because with this, I've only seen two. It's Jack Nicholson and Matt Damon. I can't take out either one for Sam Jackson. But with the three empty slots I have seen Robert Duvall in The Apostle, but I remember nothing about the movie or the performance. So technically, because I've seen it, I will slip Samuel L. Jackson in there. But I expect Samuel L. Jackson to be a pretty big contender for when we redo the 97s at the end of this miniseries.
I would love to see him in here. Yeah, I'm not substituting him for either of the two that I've seen as well, which is the same as you, Matt Damon and Jack Nicholson. Not substituting him out, but love the performance. Tarantino again said in that interview that Samuel L. Jackson understands the Tarantino dialogue more than maybe anybody else. He gives mm-hmm. it this rhythm that it's written to have. He just brings it out so naturally that in a way that nobody else can.
Yeah, I agree. All right, what do you got next?
You know, let's talk Robert De Niro real quick.
Oh.
I just wanted to bring attention to his performance. I don't necessarily want to nominate him. I just really like this performance on a personal level because of how different it is. I feel like I don't see De Niro in this as kind of a lackey, as a loser and somebody who's a stoner and a burnout and somebody who, when he comes out of prison, is kind of just destined to be, I don't know, a henchman, more or less. I like this performance from him. I feel like I haven't seen this side.
Interesting. I've never really been a big fan of this performance.
Oh, that's too bad.
I just feel that there's not much to it
in
that it feels to me like a waste of De Niro's talent.
Maybe.
Yeah. I'm so happy that you like it that much. It's not a performance I hate. I just feel like it's such a waste of such a great actor in such a not much in it role by a director who's this good. Like, I would have liked to have seen De Niro and I don't know what I could pick off the top of my head, but De Niro and Tarantino together again would be great. Well, now it's a little bit older, who knows? But at this time when they're both like in their prime, I don't know, I just kind of felt like it was a waste. Like, yeah, there wasn't much of the role. I'm very happy that you saw more into it than I did. That makes me happy, because I've always been kind of middling on it.
Okay.
Let's just fucking continue with the good shit. Best director, Quentin Tarantino. I've seen four of them. The two locks for me that are going nowhere are Curtis Hanson and James Cameron. The easy pick for me, Peter Cattaneo.
Yeah, no problem. No problem at all.
You can fuck right off.
Yeah.
You're out. I expect Tarantino to get some heavy consideration to make the final list at the end of at this miniseries.
Rightfully so. I just wanted to check. Interesting. No screenplay nom.
Yeah.
That is just not okay. That's not okay on any level. I have seen only one, actually, of the adapted. Man, that's a tough one. So I have L.A. Confidential gets the win. Listen, I'm not saying I sub it out. I am saying it's on the same level. It's up there, man. It's a great fucking screenplay.
Okay, I've seen two of them. Yeah. I've seen this and Donnie Brasco. This can easily kick out Donnie Brasco. That being said, I'm going to pump the brakes a little bit. Donnie Brasco is a really good fucking movie.
I just recently had a friend recommend that to me, actually.
I think you would like it. It's the last vestige of Pacino acting.
Interesting.
The Sweet Hereafter I'm watching very soon. Wag the Dog, I think I own. And The Wings of the Dove I'm going to be watching very soon because it just hit streaming. So I've been... maybe I should ensure that I have it before it disappears again. Yeah, this is easily in there. I like where you're going. I'll tell you right now, I don't think it's on the same level as L.A. Confidential. Mm-hmm. I hold L.A. Confidential in a lot higher regard than Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
But I love the applause you have for it. Mm-hmm. like I said, I've seen two. Donnie Brasco can fuck right off. We don't kind of redo the... We only kind of redo the top six when we do our at the end of the 97s. Yeah. But I have no problem being this in there. So then I'm going to move on, if you're all right.
Yep.
Best picture.
Let's go up here. Say it with me. Get the fuck out of there, Full Monty. Yeah, I can easily nominate this for Best Picture over Full Monty. Personally, I can also nominate this for Best Picture over As Good As It Gets.
I could possibly do that.
Yeah.
Could possibly do that. The other three are probably locks.
Yeah, I don't... other three aren't going anywhere. Good Will Hunting, LA Confidential, Titanic.
Yeah,
I'm not moving those anywhere else. But
I agree. And I do have one more. If you don't. Oh, I have editing.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I like the split screen decisions at a lot of points. It's very creative editing decisions.
Oh, shit. Okay, so it's obviously not taking out Titanic. I have seen all five. So I have Titanic, Air Force One, As Good As It Gets, Good Will Hunting, LA Confidential. LA Confidential and Titanic are locks for me. Good Will Hunting for editing. I don't really think it's trying to tell too many like stories. So the editing in there, I don't think it's good nor it's bad. I probably still wouldn't take it out because it tells that story so well. Mm. But As Good As It Gets, and I love that Air Force One is in there. Air Force One is a thoroughly enjoyable action movie.
Harrison Ford, right?
Yeah, yeah. Get off my plane. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to leave it in there because I like it. So I will kick out As Good As It Gets. I don't know. I don't really think that there's much to the editing in it, but maybe that's part of the reason why it got nominated, because it tells such a great story. But I think this, especially the heist scene, telling it from three different perspectives, I'm on board. So film editing.
I just want to at least briefly touch on the Robert Forster nomination as well.
Good call.
I like the performance. I think it's a good performance. It's a total head scratcher to me that this is the performance that got nominated.
The only one. The only Oscar nomination this whole film got.
Absolutely nuts that Pam Grier, maybe I shouldn't say absolutely nuts. I'll backtrack that a little bit. Pam Grier or Samuel L. Jackson, I would happily see in either of their categories before this. Robert Forster, not bad by a long shot. Very good, as a matter of fact. Just not all that much to do. And he kind of has this stereotypical boomer old guy performance where he's just the most stoic, emotionless person in the room at most times, even in the scenes where he's crushing on Jackie. He's very much playing it cool and not playing his cards. I don't know. I like the performance, and it's perfectly in character with what this man would do. I just don't know if I see all of the praise to it. Am I off base here?
I feel that you are. Huh. I see the praise in regards that the man grew up, this character grew up in an era where men are not supposed to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
But there are moments where he is vulnerable. Like when he sees the joy or expresses the joy in the in hearing the Delphonics. So he goes to the cassettes, the music store, and gets it himself. And when he grabs a tape and he's walking up, he's got such joy on his face. When he gets away with the money, you can just see the excitement on his face. He's just like, it worked. And in my opinion, that moment there is he's excited for Jackie.
You know what? I like that explanation a lot. And I admittedly was not taking into a lot of account the reaction shots, but there was another one, the little salute that he does when he gets caught in the dress department. And you can almost feel internally his like, oh fuck. Like, I hope I didn't just get made.
Yep.
So I do like those moments. I think that's a good thing to point out.
Awesome. That's all the noms and nods I have.
Yeah, me too.
Wicked. All right. Time for favorite quotes. This time I will be starting with my favorite quotes. So here we go with my nominees. My first nominee for favorite quote is this one here.
But let me tell you though, man, you put this bad boy in a flick, every motherfucker out there want one. I'm serious, as a heart attack. When them Hong Kong flicks came out, every nigga in the world had to have a 45. And they ain't want one, they want two, because all them niggas want to be the killer. But what them flicks don't tell you and what they don't know is that a 45 got a serious fucking jamming problem. Now, I try to steal my customers' toward a 9mm because it's damn near the same weapon. It ain't got half the jamming problems. But you know how them niggas is out there. You can't tell them shit. They want a 45. The killer had a 45. They want a 45.
My second nominee for favorite quote.
Here we go. AK-47, the very best there is. When you absolutely, positively got to kill every motherfucker in the room, except no substitutes.
And my third nominee.
Is that what I think it is?
What do you think it is?
I think it's a gun pressed up against my dick.
Well, you thought right. Now take your hands from around my throat, nigga.
And my fourth nominee.
So what'd you say?
Man, she ain't have to say shit. I know Melanie. That bitch gonna be fucking you 2 minutes after I'm out the door. Melanie real good about throwing the fucking niggas way. I mean, she ain't no damn good at it, but she likes to fuck.
No, so she ain't your girlfriend.
Is that what you thought?
No, I wasn't sure. No.
But you fucked her anyway, though, huh?
Well, the not your girlfriend part I felt more about.
Well, I hope you felt appropriately guilty afterwards.
Afterwards, I did.
And my final nominee.
I put a cherry on top. Booyah.
Sam's nominees for favorite quotes are?
Damn, girl. You getting high already? It's just 2:00.
It's that late?
You know, you smoke too much of that shit. That shit's gonna rob you of your ambition.
Not if your ambition is to get high and watch TV.
Sam's second number.
Where's Milne?
Well, that's what I want to tell you. You see, she was bugging me the whole time. She got pissy with me because I wouldn't let her carry the bag. And then she started running her fucking mouth about, you know, like, because I couldn't remember where the car was parked right away when we came out. So then she got on me about that. Is it this aisle, Lewis? Is it that aisle, Lewis? It's totally fucking with my nerves, man.
So what? You left her there?
I shot her.
You shot Melanie?
Twice. In the parking lot.
You couldn't talk to her?
Well, how can you talk to her? You know,
you couldn't just hit her?
Maybe, but at that moment, I don't know.
You shot her twice? Is she dead?
I pretty much.
What do you mean, pretty much, Lewis? That ain't no fucking answer. Yes or no? Is she dead?
I think so.
You think so? Tell me, Lewis.
She's dead.
But where'd you shoot her?
In the chest and the stomach.
Sam's third nominee.
Yeah, my nigga.
Looking out, man. I don't know what to say, man. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Who was there for your ass?
You
huh?
was there
Who?
For you.
Who?
You,
Who?
Nigga, you.
You goddamn right. See, that's how that shit works. You get your ass in trouble, I get your ass out. That's my motherfucking job. And I don't mind telling you, nigga, it's steady work.
Sam's fourth nominee for favorite quote.
My money's in that office, right? She started giving me some bullshit about it ain't there, and we gotta go someplace else and get it. I'm gonna shoot you in the head right then and there. Then I'm gonna shoot that bitch in the kneecaps, find out where my goddamn money is. She gonna tell me to. Hey, look at me when I'm talking to you, motherfucker. Listen. I go walking in there. That nigga Winston or anybody else is in there, you the first motherfucker get shot. You understand me?
Yeah.
That ain't nothing you want to tell me before we get out this car, is there?
Nope.
Last chance, motherfucker, you sure? Better be, motherfucker.
And Sam's final number.
I always feel like I'm starting over. How many bonds you said you wrote?
15,000.
Is that a lot?
It's plenty.
Well, I've flown over 7 million miles and I've been waiting on people for 20 years. And after my bust, the best job I could get was with Cabo Air, which is the worst job you can get in this industry. You know, I make $16,000 a year plus retirement benefits that ain't worth a damn. And with this arrest hanging over my head, Max, I'm scared. And if I lose this job, I gotta start all over again, and I ain't got nothing to start over with. I'll be stuck with whatever I can get. And that shit is more scary than Ordell.
And those are our nominees.
Fuck, man. Always a good sign when there's no overlap.
Yeah, right?
That's a sign of a good script right there, man.
Yeah. I just wanted to put this in there. 16,000 in 1997 is just over 30,000 in today's money.
U.S.
U.S.
So what's the conversion? Like 1.4 right now? Something like that for Canadian dollars?
Yep, roughly.
So not a lot.
So just over 40,000 roughly?
Eesh.
All right, your favorite quote.
God, that's a tough one, man. Let me see. We got that one and that one and that one. I literally have no fucking clue. I think I'm going to go. It's close. I'm going to go with Ordell's monologue in the car,
in the car?
To Max.
Okay.
Because Samuel Jackson is so terrifying.
Okay.
But it's close. It could be a number of them.
All right. Mine's pretty easy. I knew it before I started. It's when you absolutely positively got to kill every motherfucker in the room, except no substitutes.
That's a good one.
What was the weak link of the film?
I don't know. I think this is a solid film. I don't think anyone's really weak in it.
I agree. De Niro's close for me because I just feel it's such a waste. But I really like your take, and it kind of made me kind of like really kind of sit back and reassess maybe like someone of his talent made that role probably better than it could have been.
Yeah.
So who knows? So I don't really have one. That was the only one I thought of, but I didn't put it down.
Fair
so
enough.
Yeah, I agree. It's pretty solid start to finish. Are you ready for some trivia?
Yeah.
All right. In the first mall scene, Max Cherry is seen exiting a movie theater while the music for the ending credits is playing. This is, in fact, the closing music for the film itself.
Funny.
The white 1980 Honda Civic, which Jackie drives, is the same car Butch was driving when he knocked down Marcellus Wallace in Pulp Fiction. Given how badly Butch crashed after knocking down Marcellus, it's nothing short of amazing that the car wasn't a write-off.
That is true.
Yeah. Spike Lee publicly criticized Tarantino for the frequent use of the N-word in the film. Samuel L. Jackson, previously a frequent Lee collaborator, defended Tarantino in the press. Miramax chairman Harvey Weinstein
Boo.
Called Lee in an attempt to mediate between him and Tarantino, but Lee refused to speak with Tarantino.
I understand. I love Tarantino's movies. It would not be the last time in Tarantino's career he would be criticized for using that word.
Mm-hmm.
But it is what it is.
The thing is, from my understanding, Tarantino grew up in a very black neighborhood. His mother dated a lot of African-American men. This word was thrown around quite often. He grew up with this word being used in everyday language, like you would if you grew up in an African-American community.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, I don't know, while I do get it from Spike Lee, and I know that word's a sensitive issue for a lot of black people,
yes,
and I don't pretend to have the answers on this, I feel like it's not used in an inauthentic way. Like, I felt like these characters would use that word to each other in these moments.
I agree 100%. That's why I've never really understood the problem with it. Mm-hmm. It's not used, with the obvious exception of Django Unchained, yeah, where it is used derogatory, yeah, because that's appropriate for that film.
Yes.
I don't ever feel that the use of this word has been problematic. You could definitely, if you want to throw it that way, in Pulp Fiction, because Tarantino himself, as that character, uses it.
Yeah, that's maybe... Yeah, that's maybe the toughest one, which is funny, because that's probably his best film, yeah, according to many people.
Yes. The last part here I have, in the closing credits, Tarantino gives special thanks to, quote, Bert D'Angelo's daughter, and among others. In the late 1970s, Paul Sorvino starred in a television detective show, Bert D'Angelo Superstar. Thus, Bert D'Angelo's daughter is Paul's daughter and Tarantino's girlfriend at the time, Mira Sorvino.
Hmm.
Some casting what ifs, some pretty tasty shit in here. Tarantino met Robert Forster in a restaurant and handed him the script saying, "You're going to do this, and that's all there is to it." Forrester was naturally thrilled, having had a major career slump. This film saw him come back in a big way, even landing an Oscar nomination.
Yeah.
When Pam Grier walked into audition for Quentin Tarantino, "There were all my posters from 20 years ago when I was just a piss and vinegar kid," she recalled. "And I said, 'Did you put these up because I was coming over?' And Tarantino replied, 'No, I was going to take them down because you were coming over.'"
That's awesome.
According to Quentin Tarantino, Michael Keaton desperately tried to talk Tarantino out of hiring him for the role of Brady Nicolette. "His whole process was to convince me that he's not right for the role," recalled Tarantino, "but he never quite convinced me. Michael's whole thing is to deny himself and say he's not right."
That's a weird process, but yeah. Okay.
Sylvester Stallone originally wanted to play Lewis.
Yeah, no.
While John Travolta was the first choice to play Ray Nicolette.
Mm. Yeah, would have been good.
Would have been good. He pulled the diva move.
The diva move?
Yeah. Too small of a role. Yeah.
Shut up.
No worries. Thanks, Quentin. You just revived my career at Pulp Fiction, but I'm too big for your movie now.
Yeah, I'm going to go do Battlefield Earth in 2000.
Tarantino's list for Max Cherry was Paul Newman, mm-hmm, Gene Hackman, and Robert Forster.
Great list.
I really would have loved Hackman in that role.
Gene Hackman would have been good.
Yeah. Christina Applegate was considered for the role of Melanie, but she was under contract with Married with Children.
Oh, man. 90s Christina Applegate.
Yeah. The role of Winston was originally written for and offered to Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh, cool.
But Shaq's agent urged him to turn down the offer and instead only pursue starring roles. Tarantino cast Tom Lister Jr. due to his performance in Friday, and Tarantino named his favorite film, which Tarantino had named of his favorite film of 1995. So Shaq,
dude, Shaq went on to go do like some of the worst movies ever made, didn't he?
Yeah, like Shazam and Steel.
Oh, yeah. God, dude.
Can you imagine, like, Tarantino off of Pulp Fiction offers you a small role, and your agent's like,
you're like, no, starring roles only. Fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Actually, fuck yourself. I like Shaq.
Yeah.
Like, as a person.
Yeah.
As an actor, he's not very good, but.
I was just, where was I just watching? I was just watching a clip somewhere. I must have been on Instagram, of all these celebrities talking about their bad online dating experiences. Mm-hmm. And Shaq was on Tinder. And he matched with somebody, and the girl wouldn't meet up with him because she didn't believe it was him.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You should not meet up with somebody who has Shaq as their profile picture. Yeah.
So he's like, so I had to get off Tinder. closing credits. Would you watch this movie again?
Yeah, I would.
100% same. Would you recommend this movie to friends?
I would. I think that a lot of people who even like Sorry, we good?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I saw you looking at the little monitor there.
No, I always glance at it to make sure it's still recording.
Okay,
it's
no
a
problem.
Freak out thing.
But yes, I suspect that a lot of people, even ones who are Tarantino fans, may have missed this one.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly took a long time to get around to it myself. So definitely recommend checking it out.
Yeah, 100% I'd recommend this to friends. MVP of the film?
Quentin Tarantino, as he is with all of his movies, probably.
All right. I'm actually going to go Pam Grier.
Respect. Respect to that.
I just don't think somebody else in this role can pull this off.
Mm-hmm.
Did
we talk about the fact that the character in the book is white?
Jackie Burke. Yeah. No, we didn't talk about that. But yeah, he changed it specifically for Pam Grier.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, I just think she's the MVP. Quentin Tarantino makes the most sense out of when it comes to his movies because his fingerprints are all over it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think of this movie, I always think of Pam first, not Quentin.
Mm-hmm.
Recommend a good double feature with this film.
I struggled with this a little bit. I initially thought like a convoluted con plan gone awry. This movie's just fresh in my memory because it's on a list that I'm creating or that we're creating. I initially thought of American Hustle. That isn't my answer.
Okay,
but it's just fresh in my memory because it's 2013. ultimately, it's kind of a boring answer, but really the double feature for this is Pulp Fiction. It's the one that's tonally most similar, I think, and I think it would be great to go along with it. Why not after a helping of Tarantino dialogue, just have Tarantino dialogue for dessert too?
Okay, so that's funny because I was actually really curious as what you're gonna pick because you haven't watched a lot or obviously as many 90 films as I. No. Elmore Leonard novels were a rage around this time. So there was two other kind of semi-successful big Elmore Leonard adaptations that were made. So I have two of them. I have Out of Sight, which is one of a movie I fucking love that we will be reviewing for 98.
Nice.
And Get Shorty, which I think came out the year before this, starring John Travolta. They're both Elmore Leonard novel adaptations. The Get Shorty one is a little bit different tonally. So the easy pick for me, because I love Out of Sight so much, is Out of Sight. Are you going... What's your order? Are you doing chronologically? Pulp and then Jackie?
In the context of a larger watch, yes. But I want to end with Pulp Fiction, man.
Nice.
I want to end with it.
So I am going to go chronologically. So I'm going to do Jackie Brown and then Out of Sight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, personally, spoiler alert, I do like Out of Sight better than Jackie Brown. But when we get around to Out of Sight, you will see why it makes sense to watch Jackie Brown first.
I also read in trivia that Michael Keaton reprises Ray Nicolette as well.
Oh, I'm so fucking sad that you know that.
Oh, why?
Because it's such a small role.
Oh, okay.
It's a bit above a cameo.
Oh, okay.
And I was really hoping you hadn't seen that.
No, I saw it.
So when you watched Out of Sight, like when he showed up in Out of Sight, I lost my fucking mind.
You're like, oh my god, it's his character.
I'm like, holy fuck, he's playing the same fucking character.
Yeah.
This is all pre-MCU shit.
Uh-huh.
This is when at the height of like the fucking Mallrats and Clerks all shit crossover, so I was fucking excited.
Yeah, nice.
Damn it, that makes me sad.
Hmm.
What will be this film's legacy?
I came up with the least known Tarantino film, or maybe
I think Death Proof is his least known.
Maybe a Tarantino film with a delayed fuse. Like I don't really know.
For me, I don't think this film has much of. For me, when I think of this movie's legacy, it's his follow up to Pulp Fiction.
Yeah,
it's also the only movie that is not an original screenplay.
That's true. Yeah, this is only adapted screenplay.
Yep. So, did you learn anything from this movie?
I didn't know what to put for this either. This is not really a, and we all came away learning a good lesson movie. This is Pam Grier needed some fucking money and she got shit done.
I think for me, what I learned from this movie when I watched it, because this was back to, like, this was the follow-up to Pulp Fiction, is that Tarantino is really good at reviving people's careers.
Mm.
He knows who's right for the role. He picks them regardless of their star status. Like, when he put Travolta in Pulp Fiction, Travolta was a fucking nobody. He had been a star, and he was nothing. The only thing he had been in was Look Who's Talking. Yes.
Is that right?
I'm pretty sure. Wow. But he was on the downside of his career, and Pulp Fiction completely saved him.
While I don't know a lot about this person's career, the other name that comes to mind for me is David Carradine.
David Carradine wasn't doing much. He was a big star in the 70s. Massive star in the 70s. He picked up that guy's career as well. But yeah, and so he did this with Pam Grier and with Robert Forster. So that's kind of what I learned, is that Tarantino knows who's right for the role and chooses them. Basically, cast who's right for the role, not who's
hot right now.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because he's also had some massive fucking stars in his movies.
Yeah.
Like De Niro and DiCaprio. All the
Brad
does.
Pitt.
Yeah, Brad Pitt.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to sneeze. So why don't you tell us your final thoughts on Jackie Brown?
Yeah. So while this is not one of the A-tier Tarantino movies, unfortunately, well, I'm sorry that Manny had a disappointing follow-up to Pulp Fiction. Bless you, Manny. While this was not on the same level as its predecessor, it's still a very solid heist movie with great performances by all the lead cast. In particular, Pam Grier is exceptional. Really sad she didn't get a nomination for it. And in that interview that I talked about with Quentin Tarantino, he also mentioned that at this time, she would have been the first black winner of the Best Actress.
Yep.
Which, of course, would later become Halle Berry.
Yep.
But he talks about that. He's like, I really wanted her to be the first black winner of Best Actress. And I could feel how genuine he was. And I honestly felt for him, too. I felt like she was great in this. So she's definitely one of the highlights. While I didn't list her as my MVP, she's definitely, it's like 1A and 1B. Like, this is their movie together.
Yep.
This is kind of a forgotten one. This is one that people don't really talk about all that much anymore because he has so many other great movies. And while it's not one of my favorites, it's a fucking solid movie. It's really good, and I'm glad that I had a chance to revisit it, because I had a lot of fun. It's also longer, I feel like, than some of his movies, although now that I'm saying that, maybe not, because Pulp Fiction's 2.5, Hateful Eight's 2.5, and Glorious Bastards is 2.5, so I guess he just makes long movies.
Yeah, this is 225, I think, if I remember correctly.
Interesting. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is 2.5. Shit, I guess Tarantino just makes long movies.
234.
I never thought of him like that. That's so funny.
Yeah.
I'm really happy to have revisited this, and I'll definitely try to get back to it again down the line. But an excellent script, of course, highlighted by great performances, in particular by Samuel L. Jackson and Pam Grier, I thought. And Robert Forster. Manny was giving me a bit of a death glare.
Yeah, I love this movie. And despite my affection and admiration of it, I still feel it's one of Tarantino's lower tier films.
Yeah, that's a compliment.
Yep, it's still a compliment. Tarantino's one of my boys. Like I said, he's in one of my four favorite directors. It's a constant battle for the number two slot behind Fincher. So depending on my mood, you know, probably after Monday when I go see a new movie at the theater, I bet you somebody will take over the number two slot. Mm. Right now, Spielberg's sitting comfortably in the number two slot because I've been watching a fair chunk of Spielberg, and I'm enjoying good, fun movies, enjoyable, lighthearted, make me feel good movies. Try to avoid depressing films. The performances are solid throughout. Samuel L. Jackson, Pam Grier, and Robert Forster are absolutely spectacular. I agree. I think looking at this list, I'm missing two performances, but Julie Christie in Afterglow, she just doesn't hold a candle to this performance. So it's sad that that she was snubbed for an Oscar nomination. I'm very excited to see when we wrap this up if one of us actually hands her the retrospective Oscar. Hmm. We'll see how that goes. This is just a well-made movie from start to finish, and a lot of other directors, this would be the crowning jewel in their filmography, while for me it's Loose Change in Tarantino's. Hmm. So, time to give this movie a rating. Sam, what are you giving this?
It's a pretty easy 4 for me. It's not on the same level as a lot of his others, so it doesn't reach the 5 status. But it's a great, great little enjoyable movie. So easy 4.
Yeah, it's a 4 for me. Easy. It doesn't come close to a 3. I could say it maybe pushes for a 5.
It's closer to a 5 than it is for a 3 for me. But 100%. It's pretty safely in the middle.
Easy 4. All right, Sam, what we got going on next week?
Manny, this can't be right.
What?
The 7th? Am I counting that right?
You are.
The 7th annual Sampas?
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
We've been doing this a long time.
We have.
It's a long fucking time.
What are the Sampas?
I'm glad you asked, Manny. Yeah. On episode 289, we're going to do our 7th annual Sampas, which are the Samuel and Manuel Movie Podcast Awards, or some variation thereof. Mm-hmm. It's also a variation of the AMPAs, the American Motion Picture Association, something?
American Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.
Ah, fuck, shit. Yeah. So, yeah, variation of that. So, we're going to... we got the Oscars coming up, so... But who really cares about that when the Sampas are on its way? The more important of the two award shows, of course. So we will give out our own awards, both in categories that exist in the Oscars and categories that don't.
Yeah.
So we will review films from the year 2023, or rather we'll go over the film year 2023 before the Oscars do. Haha, take that, Oscars. And we will... or I guess the episode comes out after, technically.
It does.
Yeah, whatever.
Which we need to discuss. About
interesting
for next year. We have to decide if we want to come up before the Oscars.
Yeah, it's okay.
If we do, then we have to record a week earlier than we do.
But it's always a fun one.
It is. Fucking
I'm really
fun.
Looking forward to this.
So do I. I love these episodes.
Yeah, there's already we've been doing it long enough that there's already some lore behind the Sampas. So that's...
I think. And sorry to cut you off. Like we did for Tom Wilkinson, I think we should rename that category. The Bats Memorial.
Oh, yeah. The Bats Memorial Award.
Yes. I think we should.
Yeah, that's great. So, yeah. 7th Annual Sampas next week. I am very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, as am I.
It's one of the ones for us.
100%. Yeah, the first Sampas was episode 5.
Yeah, it's wild.
5. Yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited. I always look forward to these because I always look forward to these because I'm so excited to see what you pick.
And you know what? Like, I say this every time we do an award show like this. This is how the award show will go for me. I will, A, be relieved because I'm like, oh, I don't need to take notes on a movie. It's going to be an easy week. And then, B, I realize a few days before, holy shit, this is actually a lot of work. Yeah. and I need to do more work than if I was going to watch a movie. And then, C, I work my fucking ass off to get as many nominees in the right place as possible. And then... lastly, as we're doing the episode, I inevitably realize, to my horror, I have omitted somebody massive that I needed to have on there. That is every year without fail. And every year I tell myself, this is the year I'm going to be prepared. This is going to be the year that I get every category right. And I never do.
I can say that this is the first time you're actually taking steps to try to rectify that problem because you told me you've been setting up the spreadsheets.
I have, but not for this, though.
Okay.
And honestly, this would be a tough one to do it for because I would need to keep a running spreadsheet with, like, nominees for every current movie that I watch. So it'd be a little tougher to keep track of this. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to rectify the Sampas. I am going to get better at the 52 in review and at the year interviews, like the 97 year interview when it comes up.
Sweet.
I'm hopefully going to make a lot less work for myself.
Nice.
But, you know, who the fuck knows?
Yeah, I agree. It's funny, whenever we have an award show, I'm like, oh, we don't have, you know, it. I'm like, oh, a week off.
Yeah, I think the same thing, and it's more work.
It's more work, because the amount of time it would take me to watch the movie, I spend more than that time doing the research and organizing of the, yeah, it's...
Oh, yeah,
I feel this is actually more work, but it feels like less because you don't have to watch the movie. I don't know. It's fucked up.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
Happy to do it at any rate.
So, like, I love these. Like, the Sampas, the 52 in review, the year in reviews that we do, like, for the miniseries. Oh, it's just so fun. Absolutely so much fun. Okay, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star rating and a positive review, it does increase the profile of our podcast, allows more people to find us, which we greatly appreciate. You can also give us a rating on Spotify, which we would love. The more people who listen to the show, the more fun we can have. If you're on Spotify, why don't you answer our weekly question? Because if you do, I promise I will read your answer on our Real Talk episode. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at sam_manny_movie. You can email us at sammannymoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Letterboxd at Sam Reimer and Manny42, respectively. For the Samuel and Manuel Movie Podcast, I'm Manny Manuel.
the very best there is, except no substitutes. I'm Sam Reiner.
Adios!